So, sometimes that people ask during a meditation retreat to also include some loving kindness meditation, and sometimes people say, "Oh, where is the loving kindness and metta?" But you'll hopefully know by now, the loving kindness or metta is something which you use at all parts of the meditation. And yes, you can do a specific loving-kindness meditation method, but they shouldn't think that there's something special about that and we don't do it with everything else which we practice in meditation. In the back of all those t-shirts, make peace, be kind, be gentle, we should keep on saying. And middle one of those is to be kind. And you will discover in meditation, without that kindness, without that softness, it's so difficult to be able to get anywhere in meditation, whether you're doing so-called vipassana or so-called samatha or breath meditation. It's one of the attitudes which is really, really important. And not only just for your meditation, but also for your health as well. And some of you got the sniffles, some of you will have little backaches or knee aches or tummy aches, and that's just part of having a human body. And especially when you go traveling and you eat food which you're not used to. I can talk about food now because you just had breakfast and you're going to have lunch in a few hours. There's sometimes that you do get those problems. And actually, just nearly all problems will get a lot better with a simple bit of loving kindness. Unfortunately, that many people, and I did mention this in passing, assume they understand what compassion, what kindness really is. But surprise, surprise, many of you don't. The assumption is there, but the truth is something different. You're not really being kind, you're just trying to change things to make them more happy and more convenient for you. You know, so you see someone who's sick, may you be happy and well, because you don't like to see them suffering. And it's hurting you. It's not really for them. And I hope you get better. Why? You know, it's because I don't want to see you sick. It's not really the loving kindness. And one of the experiences I had a couple of years ago, which I like telling people, was just when it really is loving kindness. So that the problems get less and even disappear. The loving kindness is very much that attitude of the emperor to the monster who came into his palace. Loving kindness is a welcoming, accepting, allowing things to be as they are, not trying to change them, not trying to get rid of them, but a full acceptance no matter what you are experienced or have experienced. Which is why that simile of the demon in the emperor's palace is so wonderful. And I was saying in interviews, I probably might have said it in one of the stories, and one of the questions, answer to the questions in the evening, that part of, you know, the influence which I have is not just in the Buddhist community, but also in the psychology, psychiatry community in Australia. And there is one particular group called ASSETS here in Western Australia. It's the Association of the Survivors of Torture and Trauma, because there are many migrants come into this country, and some of the people who come into this country come from war zones or places of conflict, and they have been brutally raped and tortured, you know, to a degree which, you know, when you hear just even a portion of their stories, wants you to close your ears, because it makes your skin creep. What one human being can do to another. And they invited me to go and talk to the whole their staff and everybody some years ago. And when I asked, as I normally do, why did you invite me? And they said, "Don't you remember us? You know, half the staff here come to your talks on a Friday night." And the director was telling me that she got her permission to be in that position as director or leader, whatever she was, in that organization because of the degree which she got from university. But she said all the practical stuff, she gets from my talks, the stuff she uses every day. And stories like opening the door of your heart, stories like the monster in the emperor's palace, are two of the main stories which she uses for people who are suffering horrendous pain from the past. And they both are loving kindness stories, which means you don't try and get rid of the trauma you've experienced, but you embrace it. You really let it be. Sometimes I'm mentioning this because this is an extreme case of loving kindness and how well it works. A lot of times we think, oh, something terrible has happened to me. Loving kindness should get rid of it, should make it disappear. That is not loving kindness. Loving kindness doesn't aim to change anything except one's attitude towards the thing. And so it's amazing results, and it really inspires me, just a simple story which I never thought would be used in such terrible situations works incredibly well. So many people who went through this terrible pain and suffering, both physical and mental, you know, in these countries which are highly unstable, they were taught to welcome the demon. Welcome, monster. Thank you for coming to visit. Can I get you something to drink? To welcome those memories of extreme torture, rape and pain. To welcome them, which was totally unexpected advice. But when they did that, the whole scenario changed. It was, as they say these days, a game changer. Not to try and get rid, but have loving kindness and compassion towards. To embrace it and to grow from it. Not to grow apart from it, but to grow from it. And then to transform it and make it something which is the old story of the shit turning into the mango. The fertilizer for who you are. And it's wonderful to see some results of that. People who had actually overcome incredible pain, physical and mental and emotional, just through the power of loving kindness. And I mention that because that is what loving kindness truly means. It's much more powerful than you think. It can accept anything, and you become free from it. Not free from it. You become free with it. Now this is the extreme, just to get you interested. Now how that relates to your meditation is, you know, you have loving kindness to your aches and pains, to all the things which happen to you in your life, all the difficulties, all the problems. You're having a wonderful meditation and something goes wrong. Why? Don't try and get rid of it. Loving kindness meditation embraces it. Allows it to be. It literally is opening the door of your heart, no matter how painful it feels, no matter how disappointing it is, no matter how troublesome it is. You literally do open your door of your heart totally. Come in. Because you find the main reason why people suffer is trying to push it out, trying to reject it, trying to think it never happened, trying to think, if only I'd done something else, then this would have happened. No, it's here. So embrace it, accept it. And my own little story was just how that you can do that with physical pain. That was 2 or 3 years ago, when, if any of you had a tummy ache, welcome to life in a Buddhist monastery. Tummy ache is what we call occupational hazard for a monk. Now you all think you're giving me something nice to eat. Oh, you like it. But you know, I'm Ang Mo. Even if, you know, you're a friend, you know, you make your favorite meal, what you really like, and another friend from just around the corner, even the same suburb, you invite them over, and it's not what they like. You know, just people's tummies are just so varied. That's why there are so many restaurants. If everybody liked the same thing, there'd only be one restaurant in the world. They'd find out what everyone likes and just cook that. But you know, people's likes are various, and sometimes what we can tolerate, what we can't tolerate, especially as a monk, because you don't tell me what you put in the food. So, you know, it's just, you know, that's why we do the blessing before the food. We just pray, please may this may this not hurt my tummy. But every now and again, as you get, this is part of the course. You know that I'd rather have that, just have people give me food. Because it's such a beautiful interaction of like dana, of giving and taking, when people actually offer you things. And even if, you know, I could get something much better myself, no. You might get food which is more tasty and you can digest better, but you'd miss out this beautiful interaction of people really caring for you and going out of their way trying to find something that you like and cooking it for you and presenting it to you. Such a beautiful interaction. So, you know, tummy aches, I can take those, as long as we have this beautiful kindness, which is always the interaction of dana, of giving and sharing with each other. But on this one occasion, it was extreme. I got food poisoning. You know, and you know it's food poisoning. You don't just have an ache in the gut. You know, you're just really sick. And you're holding your tummy and just, oh. And I am, sometimes people think I'm quite soft, but I can be incredibly tough when I want to. And you know all the stories from Thailand. You can endure. And I was holding my tummy in my cave, rolling on the floor because you could not sit still. And it really, if you've had food poisoning, it really hurts. You know, it's like contractions in the stomach, which you cannot resist. You have to sort of hold your tummy and groan. But, you know, if all these things which I teach you, sometimes people ask me, you know, what you write in the book, is that what you practice? Or you just write it and invent it? You know, you have to practice it before you can teach it to others, but sometimes you do forget. And so I was rolling around there, holding my tummy, and then I thought, what would I tell other people to do? And that's when I said, loving kindness. So instead of holding my tummy and trying to get rid of that pain, I just lay down and just gave 100% loving kindness to that agony. Which is again, opening the door of your heart to it. Not trying to get rid of it. Allowing it to be. Having the attitude it could hurt like that forever and it would be okay. And I'd accept it. I'd embrace it. Now when you do things like that, straight away the mental tension disappears. Which I said last night is 99% of the pain is I don't want this, I don't like this. But the other thing which happened, which was no surprising but very beautiful, because I was very aware of the pain, I gave it that little bit of kindness, letting it be. I clearly perceived the intensity of the pain get less. It was relaxing, only a tiny bit. But it felt a little bit less agonizing. So I continued giving it this loving kindness. And it got less, and less, and less. And I did have a clock in my room. It just took 20 minutes, that's all, of loving kindness. Pure, 100%, unadulterated, no GM additives. Organic, loving kindness. And then the pain had totally gone. And it was miraculous, you know, that you had aches and pains in the tummy, real big strong ones, and then there was nothing there, you were just normal again. So I got up and meditated and did whatever I needed to do. But it was fantastic, you know, to see just how powerful compassion can be. You can relax a part of your body so much that doctors will say that's a bacterial infection, isn't it, food poisoning? That bacterial infection, which was real, it wasn't a small thing, it was a huge thing, and how it can just totally dissipate in 20 minutes without any medication, just through giving it kindness and relaxing the whole thing. And afterwards I told people, look, you try that, and if it works, then what you've just done is loving kindness, it's real compassion. If it doesn't work, it means you're not doing compassion. It's a test so you know what this compassion and kindness really is. You may think you know what compassion is. You may apply that to an ache and pain or difficult situation. It doesn't do anything because it's not compassion. If it really is compassion, true letting go, embracing, opening the door of your heart, being kind, you'll find being selfless, you'll find things do relax and they disappear. And afterwards, I sort of imagined, you know, being a little bit of a scientist, so if that was a bacterial infection, where have the bacteria gone? Because my tummy was fine and it never came back. You know, you couldn't have killed the bacteria through loving kindness, like antibiotics do. So I imagined I had the solution, the insight. I imagined that in my guts, all those little bacteria, they've got lots of little, what do they call? That's a little appendages. They'd all cross their appendages and they're all sitting quietly in meditation in my gut instead of causing havoc. I imagine that's the only solution I got to why the bacteria weren't causing inflammation and stuff. But it certainly did work. And it reminded me just what this compassion truly is. If it really is compassion, the effects of torture and trauma disappear. The agony in your gut disappears. The problem in your meditation disappears, whatever that problem is. Which is why an antidote to every hindrance that ever was or ever will always be kindness. So much so that when I'm meditating, you might get into quite a deep state of meditation, but you know you're not in the jhanas yet, and you get a deep state of meditation, but it's not progressing. You know, and many people ask me that question, and this is what I do. I just check my kindness, my metta level. And you know, all I need to do is just tighten up, but enhance the kindness. It's okay. Doesn't matter. The door of my heart's open to you, whatever I'm experiencing. That sort of attitude. And as soon as I give that tiny bit of kindness, the meditation always takes off. It showed me just in all the experience I have as a meditator how important that is and how a lot of the problems in meditation is because you neglect the kindness. You always want to get somewhere, do something, get rid of things instead of literally opening the door of your heart to this moment. And this is such an important teaching that I also developed the way of meditation. Not really a way of meditation, but a description of the path of meditation. You know, you've all heard this before, the thousand-petal lotus. Now, a lotus is closed at night, in the morning, when the first light and warmth of the sun hit the outermost lotus leaf, it opens up. Because it opens up, the next layer of petals can now receive the light and warmth of the sun, so they too can open up, allowing the second layer of petals to receive the warmth of the light of the sun, and that opens up. And so the third, the fourth, the fifth, that's how a lotus opens up. And that's such a beautiful simile for meditation. You are that lotus. And I like the lotus simile because if you ever look at a lotus which is all closed up, the outer layer of petals is not beautiful at all. You know, it's serrated, it's rough, it's usually dusty because it has to take all the weather. And if you did not know a lotus, if you look at that bud of a lotus, we've got an open one there but not a closed one. If you look at that closed bud of a lotus, no one would ever expect the beauty and fragrance and subtlety of the colours inside. Just like you. A lot of times, you know, the only outermost layer of petals of your lotus called your body and mind, you think, not me, I can't get into jhanas, no way there's anything so beautiful and fragrant and serene inside me. But what happens in meditation? You open up and you find it, each one of you little lotuses sitting in front of me. And each one of you got the most amazing, fragrant, beautiful, blissed out petals. You just need to open up, that's all. And how do you open up? The lotus opens up because of the warmth and the light from the sun. You open up because of the warmth of compassion, the light of mindfulness. What I keep on saying is kindfulness. So if you're aware and kind, you open up. And that's such a beautiful thing to watch, the opening of a lotus. You know, you're aware of what's going on, and you're kind to this moment. This is the real loving kindness. The door of my heart is open to this old body of mine, you know, with a nose which has hay fever, which legs which are aching, which a body which is burping, with a backside which is, you know what, we're talking about that a lot the last few days, especially with that joke of that old 98-year-old lady. So now I'm looking at anyone who does this, and I know exactly what you're up to. So, you know, that's your body. So you open the door of your heart to it. And it's the same if someone does that in, you know, and you're sitting behind them. Open the door of your heart to it, but not your nose. It's part of life, so don't get upset at it. And you find if you open the door of your heart to things, the problem vanishes. It disappears. You open up and you go inside things, rather than trying to get out of things. So you go inside this body of yours through kindness. Through kindness, the body relaxes. And because it relaxes, many of the aches and pains which actually stop you being still vanish. You don't get rid of aches and pains by force. You don't say, okay, I'm going to sit here on this floor, it doesn't matter. Even if I get sick, even if it really hurts, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to go through pain. There's one of my friends I grew up with as a monk in Thailand. He decided to sit through pain. So there he was sitting meditation in Thailand. His knees were aching. His knees were in agony. His knees were exploding, but he wasn't going to give in. He was going to sit through pain. We had to take him to hospital for double knee reconstruction. That's Ajahn Menindo. It's crazy. Why do people do that for? That is not the path of meditation. That is not Buddhism. Instead, we have this beautiful kindness, which is why you've got your own on switch. You've got nice beds. You know, even though that sometimes the food hasn't been, you know, the best, you know, I've asked many of you, because I really would really try hard, and Danny will try hard to get you exactly what you like. Why do you do this? You're supposed to be a meditation teacher, not the chef, Ajahn Brahm. But you know, you do this because I realize how important it is to have a happy tummy and a healthy body and a relaxed body to get into deep meditation. So this is part of it. So we try really hard. We may not be successful yet, but Daniel and I, we're trying our very best to get exactly what you need so you can have happy tummies. Happy tummies means peaceful minds, means stillness, means jhanas, enlightenment, the whole works. Don't you remember the Buddha? What was the meal he had before he became enlightened? He had this meal which was literally prepared for a heavenly being, for a deva, Sujata. She cooks special, supposed to be milk rice, which was, you know, a speciality. And she cooked it, and she was about to present it to a heavenly being sitting in a tree, and she gave it to the Buddha instead. So, you know, you don't give rubbish, you don't give leftovers to heavenly beings. This was high-class food. And that's why the Buddha became enlightened. So, if you haven't got any good meditation, it's not your fault, it's the food. So, well, you're being kind to your tummy. You're being kind to your body, and then your body relaxes. That's also why we encourage people to sit on chairs. Please be kind to your body. It's going to last a long time. If you're kind to it, that's why we have aircon here, trying to make it warm enough for you, but not too warm. Why we have lots of blankets, courtesy of SIA. You have all these wonderful things here, so please make use of them. Because when you're kind to your body doesn't cause you any problems. It vanishes, just like I was kind to my gut, and all the pain vanished. And then you could be peaceful, you could meditate. So be kind to the body. Now be kind to your mind. Give loving kindness, even to the past and the future. If the past wants to come up, don't go say, get out of here, Ajahn Brahm said. No past, no future, be in the present moment. Okay, Ajahn Brahm said that, it's on the tape. Is that working yet? Okay, why not? Maybe you're not being kind. So you can tell the past, okay, I'll be kind to you. It's okay, if you want to come up, that's fine by me. Sometimes I call that reverse psychology. If you're kind to the past, it doesn't want to bother you anymore. You're a waste of time, it's going to go and bother somebody else. If you're kind to the future, it doesn't bother you. It's an amazing thing what happens with kindness. There was this one monk, is that Ajahn Lee, one of the great stories of loving kindness. He was one of the forest monks. When he was wandering through Thailand, he came to a village, and you know, you would always check in with the village headman, you know, in the afternoon before you stayed anywhere, you know, just to make sure that he knew what was going on, and you know, that you weren't a thief or a spy or something, and also so the village would be able to prepare something for your alms food the next morning. And many villagers were very keen Buddhists, and so if they saw a visiting monk, you know, after their evening meal, they would come and listen to a Dhamma talk from them. And so he checked in with the village elder, and they took him to a nice place where he could sit meditation. So he sat at the root of a tree, and they went off for their, you know, finish off their duties and have their dinner, and they said, we'll be back in a couple of hours to hear a Dhamma talk. And so he sat down at the root of a tree. Now in Thailand, just like in Singapore, you've got to choose your tree. The tree he chose was not a good choice, because he felt after 5 minutes a red ant walking up his leg and biting him, and then a second, and then a whole stream, and then there were hundreds of these red ants crawling on him, biting him, and they really hurt. But he was a monk, a tough monk, a disciple of Ajahn Mun. He just sat there, and the next thing he knew, he was running away. It's amazing how mindfulness works. Just like, you know, when a thought comes up, before you know it, you're somewhere else. And he didn't know how he got up from their tree, but now he knew he was running away. And so he stopped himself and he thought, no, I'm a monk, disciple of the Buddha, I shouldn't run away. And he looked where he'd been sitting and was swarming with red ants. So he went back and sat on his cushion, right in the middle of this swarm of biting, vicious, pathological, homicidal ants. No, it's not pathological, psychotic, I mean. Psychotic ants. And they were biting him like anything. But what did he do? The door of my heart is open to you, ants. You can bite me as much as you like. There's plenty of skin there, just leave me a little for myself. And what happens? As usual, the number of ants biting him got less and less, until there's only one or two biting him, and then even they stopped. And he could feel all the ants walking down his legs until the last one left his body. No more ants on him. And he just carried on in this beautiful loving kindness meditation for a couple of hours. And you know, I told you that if you want to wake up in the morning, just don't need to use the alarm clock, tell yourself I'll get up at 5 o'clock. This is what monks do, or lay people do if they get deep meditation. They tell themselves how long they want to sit meditation for. So he said 2 hours because the lay people were coming. So he timed himself without any clocks, and after a couple of hours he came out of meditation, but he kept his eyes closed because he could hear the lay people coming. And he opened his eyes and he saw them dancing. He thought, this is a very strange custom, you know, for when Buddhist Thai people come and visit a monk to dance in his presence. And then he realized what the dance was. It was the psychotic, homicidal red ant dance. Because there was literally millions of them surrounding him. And as they came close, they were biting all these lay people. But he said, around him, there was this circle, 1 meter diameter, or 1 meter radius, a no man's land. The ants had been protecting him all this time. 1,000. None of them were actually on him. He could see a circle all around him. That's where they started. That's what happens when you have loving kindness. Even the animals protect you. Then that's actually how we got into beautiful meditation as well. So you don't have to worry about anything with loving kindness. You are protected, full on. So when you do a bit of real loving kindness, not only does your body relax, but you get protected. And if there are any disturbances, someone bangs the door. Oh, isn't that wonderful? Someone's coming in to meditate. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May you have a wonderful meditation. Or they bang the door as they go out. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Someone has just finished a wonderful meditation. You know, that's what happens when you have loving kindness meditation. Your whole perspective changes. And instead of, you know, just getting upset, you have this beautiful kindness and acceptance to everything. And even if someone does move their bottom and let off some wind, oh, isn't it wonderful? They must feel so much better after letting go of, you know, all that pressure inside their intestines. You have this beautiful attitude, which means you don't get negative. So all those things which were disturbances for you before are no more a disturbance at all. They're accepted. And that's just the external disturbances. They don't disturb you anymore. The crows. Oh, it's so natural to hear the beautiful sound of the crow. Gah, gah, gah. Well, the other crows like it. So this is how loving kindness overcomes the external disturbances as well. It's what Ajahn Chah meant. It's not the sound disturbs us, it's we disturb the sound. In other words, we react to it with negativity. When we have this beautiful loving kindness, the door of my heart is open to everything. The door of my nose is open to every smell. The door of my ears are open to every sound. And that type of attitude means no negativity, and you get peaceful very, very quickly. And then any other aches and pains in the body, you open the door of your heart to them, which means they relax and they disappear. You get what is called in meditation a tranquility of the body. The aches and pains are all gone. And if you do have any thoughts in the mind, you're kind to them. Ah, little thought. I don't know why you want to come and bother me, but you can come. Come in. I love you, little stupid thought. Which means because you don't give the thoughts negativity, you don't try and push them out. Whether it's the past which keeps on bothering you, or anxiety about the future which keeps on obsessing you. Because you're kind to all that past and future, what happens? Just like the monster in the emperor's palace. It gets less and less and less and less when you welcome it. Until all the past and the future. One more act of kindness. Yeah, you can come in past if you want. Vanishes completely away. Through the power of kindness. If it doesn't vanish away, it means it's not kindness. You haven't been practicing it properly. You haven't really understood. And as you see these things disappear, you get one of the greatest insights into the meaning of compassion, of metta. You understand it now because it's an experience for you. Not something you read about, not something you believe, not something you chant every morning, but it's something you've experienced. This loving kindness, this beautiful sense of openness, acceptance to the monster, and seeing the monster vanish. Seeing the gut pain disappear, that's compassion, that's kindness. You understand it and you get the great insight into one of the amazing parts of being a human being, what compassion is, which a lot of people just do not really understand. They think they do, but they don't. And then you take it even deeper into the meditation. It's fantastic when you're just watching your breath. Why is a breath sometimes hard to see? Because you're not kind enough to it. Why does it keep going this way and that way and get sort of unpleasant? Because you're not kind to it. If you're kind to this breath, you've nice breath. I love you very much, Bess. You've just been doing so much hard work. And all the time I'm really busy talking, doing stuff, and you just go on with your job. Have you ever thanked your breath? Thank you, breath, for looking after me all these years, feeding me all this wonderful oxygen which has allowed me to do my work and enjoy my life, taking away out all this carbon dioxide so the plants can take it in and grow. Because remember, your out breath, where you breathe out carbon dioxide, is your gift. It is your gift to all that's green in this world, because that needs that carbon dioxide. And the plants, through their photosynthesis, they give you the oxygen as their gift back. So the breath is what connects each one of you to everything which is green and alive in the plant world. Isn't that beautiful? And that means you have this beautiful breath and you really get into it and you have a lot of kindness, which means it soon gets into the delightful breath. If you haven't had the joy yet, which some people have been asking about, that's the other way of generating joy. Kindness, compassion, loving kindness towards your breathing. And when you have that loving kindness, it just makes the breath so beautiful and delicious. I don't know why more teachers don't teach this, because it's so effective to put loving kindness meditation and the breath together as one. To have this beautiful loving kindness on the breath. The first time I did that was on a meditation retreat here in Perth, but another place over in Safety Bay. I was only teaching a weekend retreat, and you know what it's like being a teacher. You always have to try and think of something new. Well, you know, maybe something I haven't taught for 3 years, so hopefully you've forgotten it. That's why I always say I like teaching older people, because they've usually forgotten the story I told last year. Younger people remember everything. So anyway, I was thinking what to teach them. I said, let's teach them loving kindness with the breath. And of course, when I was teaching that and doing it myself, oh, incredible meditations. Really, really deep and so easy, just sitting there and just blissing out the whole world. Because that's an important part. You know, I'm talking about, just going even deeper now, of these nimittas and these jhanas and stuff. When I think, someone I think may have been Angie, was told me to have a look at this video interview of this, I think, Indian lady who had a near-death experience, you know, she wrote a little book about it. What was her name? Yeah, okay, yeah. Her. And you know, this is so similar in some senses to the jhanas, because, you know, she went to this beautiful light, went to this realm of pure love, where she just totally immersed and vanished in this incredible, blissful, pure love. Now that's like a jhana experience. But what fascinated me with that description is how the deep bliss of any experience we also associate with the perfection of love and kindness. The two are exactly the same. It's just how we look at it. Pure love is bliss. Bliss is pure love. The ecstasy. And this is what you're starting to develop. The part of a thing which we call love and compassion is also very blissful. And sometimes it's, especially in those jhanas, the piti sukha, the bliss of the jhanas, it's really impossible to distinguish that with what she described as this pure love. And this is what you can apply even early on in the meditation. Beautiful breath, love that breath, add that kindness, that compassion to it. And if you do, it becomes incredibly blissful. Someone here's got a rabbit. Every time she strokes the rabbit, she feels bliss and happiness. That's what happens when you have this loving kindness. You get this happiness back. If you haven't got a rabbit, we've got that bobtail somebody saw the other day. They said this sort of reptile. Take it up and stroke. Yeah, oh, poor bobtail. It's very rare you get a Actually, you don't need to stroke it, but if you can find some fruit, those bobtails, they really love things like strawberries or watermelon. So you just leave some there and it will take it and they will just love you for it. We'll come back every day try to get some more. They're very cute, these things. But these are, when you give kindness like that, don't you get happiness back? Now you can actually make that connection with what you give kindness to, you get this beautiful boost of happiness back. So whatever your meditation object, please add that kindness and the care if it's with the breath. The breath becomes beautiful and delightful very quickly. You're opening the door of your heart. You really care about this breath. And then you stay with the breath. You don't wander off because it's the happiness, the fulfillment, the sense of joy which keeps you attached to the breath, which keeps you stuck there. And this is what it's supposed to do. And then breath will vanish when it does and nimitta comes up. If you've got lots of joy and lots of metta, then nimitta is always gorgeous if you've been doing some metta with whatever meditation object you've had. Because, you know, the metta is just a very beautiful, gorgeous state of mind. So a light comes up, oh, that's just so nice. Some of you have got nimittas and they're sort of bright, but they haven't got that oomph to it. They haven't got this, oh, this is beautiful, this is wonderful. And one of the reasons is because you haven't added that ingredient of metta, kindness, to the meditation. So even if you haven't done it so far and you get a light coming up in your meditation, please add a bit of kindness. Light, the door of my heart's open to you. Thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate you. Whatever it is, that sort of attitude. You don't say those things. It's like subverbal. It describes an attitude you have. If a light appears in the mind, you totally embrace it with this respect and kindness. And then you find that light becomes bright and brilliant and beautiful and ecstatic. And once the snowball effect happens, it gets bigger and bigger. Then you're off and you soon get into very, very deep meditations. Simply because you've got a beautiful nimitta to watch. If nimittas come and go, imagine if it's a really beautiful, lovely one. It stays with you because it attracts you. You attract it because you've got the kindness. So please add the kindness in the meditation. And if you find it hard to add the kindness in the meditation, add the kindness outside of the meditation as well. That's one of the reasons I try and open the doors for each one of you. Sometimes you beat me to the door and open it up for me. This is a simple act of kindness like that. A simple act of kindness like looking out for one another. You know, somebody, you know, doesn't get up early enough for the breakfast. You know, you knock on their door, even better. You actually take them a breakfast, find out what they like and say, breakfast in bed today. Or if it's anybody's birthday, I don't know about your birthday, if it's anyone's birthday, please let Dania know and I will give you breakfast in bed. Wouldn't that really tell you, oh wow, what a lovely act. You'd have wonderful meditation that day as a result. Can you see that act of kindness? And now it gives you this beautiful happiness and joy, which means when it gets into the meditation really glows. You know, when you're having your lunch, you know, and you see someone, you know, has forgotten something, just point it out to them. You know, you've forgotten the sort of the curry or you've forgotten this. You know, do you want some more? I play like that when we have the food. You know, in Bodhinyana Monastery, all the food is put out there. It's, you know, help yourself. Sometimes if I see that something which I know another monk likes, I pick it up and put it in his bowl. If there's only two or three ice creams, because sometimes there's so many monks over there, we don't have enough ice cream for anybody. But, you know, I'm the senior monk, I get the first choice. So I pick the ice cream, put it in my bowl. And then afterwards, I go and give it to the monk who really needs one. Otherwise they won't get it. So you do like kind little things like that, and it gives you so much happiness and gives the other people happiness. It brings in this joy, this metta, which makes the meditation and this retreat such a beautiful experience. So never resist a chance to do an act of kindness on this retreat. You know, someone has finished their lunch. While they're not looking, take their plates and wash it for them. Just for fun, just for kindness. No, but please wait till they finish their meal first. Before you take their plates. Otherwise they'd be a bit upset. So any act of kindness outside of the retreat, you know, would mean that when, outside of the meditation, would mean that when you sit down to meditate, you've got this beautiful feeling that somebody was really kind to me today. And it makes you feel so good that you start meditating and you soon get into very deep meditations. So the meaning of this morning talk is never, ever underestimate the power of kindness for your physical health, for relaxing the body when you're sitting in meditation, for making sure that you're warm enough, you're comfortable enough. It's really important. Don't be think you're a tough guy. Even the Buddha sat, he got a big cushion of grass when he sat under the Bodhi tree. Have you ever seen Bodhi trees? Those fig trees? All those knobbly roots? You try sitting on one of those roots. After 5 minutes, your body will be so sore. The Buddha got a big grass pillow to put under his backside, first of all. So he was comfortable, he was in the shade, it was a beautiful place to stay, it was like a garden. So be kind to your body, and be kind to your mind. Even any obstacle in meditation, like keeping on thinking, please be kind to it. And if you have that kindness, it is like the monster in the Emperor's Palace, it disappears. Any trauma from your past, embrace it, let it in, it's part of you. It's who you are. Be it. And any one of you who thinks, oh no, I've been too traumatized in my past, I always invite you to go and have a walk in our forest. And as you're walking in our forest, I ask you to try and find one perfect tree. And if you can find one, please come and tell me, because no one's found a perfect tree yet in our forest. They're either charred, burnt, bent, crooked, limbs falling off, brown leaves. There's always something wrong with every tree, which is why it's a beautiful natural forest. If that tree was perfectly straight, with all the limbs in place, we'd call it a tree in a government plantation. It's not natural and it's not beautiful. Every natural tree is scarred and damaged, just like you. So if you are damaged and scarred by your life so far, you belong to the beautiful trees in the natural forest. Welcome. That's a lovely simile, because sometimes people think, oh no, we need to be straight and perfect to be beautiful. That's not the way. Look at the trees in the forest. Which means you can even love, embrace any pain you've felt in the past. Which means it's not a problem anymore. Which means you can be free. Open the door of your heart to everything, and then you can find real peace. Beautiful, delightful breaths, nimittas, jhanas, enlightenment, the whole works. Never underestimate the power of loving kindness. At the end of the retreat, as usual, I'll do a guided loving kindness. But, you know, I think that's a bit fake, the guided loving kindness. I like the loving kindness all the time, you know, with everything you do. So, any comments or questions so far about loving kindness? Yes. Yeah. You know why that's the case? That is because that was answered by some research which was done by Professor Pim van Lommel. He was a professor of medicine, I often quote him, a professor of medicine in the Netherlands. And he had heard many anecdotes of people who said when they were supposed to be dead, that they were floating out of their body, they could see things, hear things, and they could remember what they said and what happened. They were floating out of their body, going towards a light. And the classic what's called NDEs, near-death experiences. And he wanted to give this this idea of some strong scientific footing, or just he wanted to prove whether it existed or not, and he was in a position to do so. He was the head of cardiology in 3 hospitals, I think, in the Netherlands. And his sample group were every patient who went into those hospitals under cardiac arrest, I think over about 1 or 2 years. And those who survived, he gave a questionnaire to see if they had these near-death experiences. And the strange thing, which was unexpected, was that the only ones who had NDEs were the ones who were not only under cardiac arrest, but whose brain had stopped working as well. So it's not everyone who has a cardiac arrest and so-called dies. No, not for 10 minutes. It's those people whose brain totally stops working. So it's not everybody has it, but if your brain stops working, if you're literally brain dead, and then it comes back again, then you usually have them. So I don't know him, but it's probably, you could assume that his brain was still working. The cardiac arrest didn't last that long. Yeah, but they say they died, so you know the heart stopped for a while, and they said they were dead, but under cardiac arrest. But your brain has to totally stop for it to have an NDE. So not everyone does, and also that even if they did, you know, sometimes the memory is impaired and they can't remember it afterwards. Remember, we listened to this amazing documentary of a man who. He was found unconscious in the back of his house somewhere in the UK, and he had totally lost all his memory. He'd only recently been remarried and couldn't even remember his wife or the marriage or anything. And it was such a devastating to have the whole memory wiped out. He still had the memory of, you know, how to speak and how to do arithmetic and stuff like that, but his memory of people and places had totally vanished. And no one knew why. Until they had a hypnotist. The hypnotist regressed him and found out exactly what happened, because under hypnosis he had perfect recall of everything. He'd been in the shed in the back of his house when, you know, the old telephones, not the cell phones these days, the telephone rang in his house, and he rushed out of the shed to answer the phone and banged his head on an open shutter of the workshop. And that literally knocked his memory out. And they gave him the post-hypnotic suggestion: when you come out, you remember everything again. But when he came out, he couldn't remember a thing. Under hypnosis, he could remember his wife, former wife, and everything, and how he had the accident. But outside, he couldn't remember anything. It's amazing the way the memory works. Sometimes these things happen, but we don't remember them. But I think it's more than likely that Mr. Packer, he didn't have it long enough for his brain to stop to have the NDE. 10 minutes, maybe not long enough. Yeah, just unconsciousness, yeah. But many people have those, yes?
It's not that the book that said NG, I'm not sure whether it's the same Indian lady.
I think so, yeah.
In Hong Kong.
Yeah.
She died of cancer.
Yeah.
And then she described how she... life was the tapestry.
Yeah.
And she met her father, her best friend who also died of cancer.
Mm.
And what made her come back? She saw her brother in London catching her flight to see her.
Yeah.
So she said, "Oh dear, my brother is coming to see me.
I better go back."
She went back to her body.
Yeah.
I mean, this is her
perception of things, yes. Yes, yeah, indeed. But I was just focusing especially on that story of the description of what was experienced when she went through to that light. She merged into that nimitta. And just how the perceptions of bliss are indistinguishable from the highest perceptions of love. Which is one of the reasons why the metta, the kindness, is so important. You get that seed early on in the meditation, And that will bring the joy, the happiness, which will take you very, very deep. That was the main reason why I put that in. Okay, so have some nice meditation, enjoy yourselves, and please go into that nimitta, but please come back again. Especially for lunch in 2 hours' time. Sadhu! 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 Very good. Have a nice morning. And interviews for those who want interviews from now.